Hey, everybody, and welcome to Viewing Angles, the only podcast that's willing to talk about Gemini Man and Joker in the same podcast. I'm Dan Leo.
And I'm Robert Mecki.
And we are your viewing anglers for tonight. Viewing angels.
Viewing anglers. Hey, we're just fishing for bad opinions tonight.
Yeah, nuts. Exactly. So we got a very special episode coming up for you guys. We missed last week, so we're going to be talking about Joker, the Joaquin Phoenix comic book vehicle, and Gemini Man, the double Will Smith extravaganza.
Yeah.
Shot in 120 FPS, just like this podcast.
Yep, in 3D, no less.
Right, which we're strictly RPX. We don't do 3D here. We do Regal's proprietary IMAX technology.
Yeah, we're a LIMAX podcast.
Yeah, we are sponsored by all those fake IMAXs you see at movie theaters.
Yeah, any movie format with an X in it, that's us.
That's us. All right, but first, let's get right into the box office. Coming in number one is Joker again, $55 million. Total domestic gross up to $193 million. That's a spicy meatball.
They made their budget so much back in their second week.
Yeah.
Wild.
This is, I mean, what can really take this down, do you think? Do you think this could go three in a row?
I'm curious. Next week,
we've got Zombieland next, and Maleficent.
Maleficent, I don't think, is going to do that well. Zombieland, maybe, but it's been 10 years since the first Zombieland, and I don't think that had like a bombastic box office performance.
So, right, but don't you think that the word of mouth maybe has built the anticipation
of Zombieland? I mean, I guess,
yeah, and Emma Stone is like a bigger star than she was.
Oh, they're all bigger stars now than they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for it. I think it's going to be good, and I hear that it's very good. But I don't know if the general public is going to react to this in the same way that they're reacting to Joker. I guess Joker will be in its third week, but yeah. I don't see any movie next week making over $50 million.
Right. Do you see if this drops by, let's say, a little bit more than half, mm-hmm. we're looking at about 27 million ish. Will anything beat that?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Probably let's bring it healthily down to 25 million. So we think that Zombieland is going to make more than 25 million.
I think Zombieland makes 30 million opening weekend. I don't know about Maleficent because I don't remember how well the first performed. It's also been a pretty significant amount of time between those two. And Angelina Jolie is not a box office draw. Like, here's the thing. No, in today's day and age, nobody's a box office draw anymore because you can just look at Gemini Man for proof that Will Smith is no longer, like, there's no such thing as a star in Hollywood anymore.
All right, Maleficent had a global box office of $758 million.
That's under a billion. That's a failure for Disney.
That is a failure. Abject failure.
Yeah. What a joke.
Yeah, I think that's enough to it probably close something big. I think Maleficent could probably go $50 million. Think about this production budget is like $180 million.
So here's why I'm curious though. Yes, the production budget is huge. I think that this movie will. I don't think this movie is going to turn a profit unless you pull in, you know, like Hollywood accounting. I don't know what the fuck they do, but in Hollywood, everything makes a profit.
No, nothing makes a profit.
Oh, sorry, you're right. Nothing makes a profit. Because you don't want to pay taxes. But
yeah,
this is the first live action sequel that we're getting from Disney. So I'm actually curious to see how this performs.
Is it really the first live action? Well, I mean, I guess besides like Last Jedi.
OK, well, Star Wars doesn't count. Marvel movies don't count.
Right. OK. Proprietary Disney content.
This is a Disney I mean, I guess it's not really Disney.
What about
because
Herbie
Sleeping
Fully
Beauty,
Loaded? Does
Sleeping
that count?
Beauty is in the fucking public domain.
Yeah, but what about Lion King 2, Simba's Pride?
That's not live action. What are you talking about?
Oh, live action. Okay, so what about Herbie Fully Loaded then?
Is that a sequel? Is Herbie Fully Loaded a sequel?
Yeah, no, I think it's like it's a reimagining or a reboot. Like, it's Herbie is eternal. Like, there's a reason why Herbie's in an old ass car. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, Herbie, there's give me the box office numbers for Herbie,
the Disney character. Herbie the Love Bug is a fictional sentient anthropomorphic 1963 Volkswagen Beagle.
What do they know what a anthropomorphic means?
That is featured in several Walt Disney motion pictures, starting with the 1968 feature film The Love Bug.
Wow.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it, man.
Anthropomorphic
means Herbie rides again.
It would be a car with human proportions, and that is not what Herbie Fully Loaded looks like. Is there any movie where we have, I guess, other than Transformers, cars with human proportions? Like, do they know what anthropomorphic means?
Is that Herbie is a Disney movie, live action, and it's had sequels. And you know what? Herbie Fully Loaded worldwide made $144 million.
Wow. What was the budget?
$50 million.
Really?
So it doubled its budget. $50 million for Herbie Fully Loaded. The times have changed.
How did they not make a sequel to this yet?
Because that was like number five. They know when to stop. It's not like Fast and Furious. They just can't keep pumping them out. I would love to see a Fast and Furious Herbie crossover. I think that's what the people need, and I think that's what they want, and I think we should all go to jail for depriving the people of this.
We should, but also we should watch Herbie Fully Loaded. I've never seen this movie. I don't know what it's about. I know it has Lindsay Lohan in it.
I think that's all you need to know.
Yeah. Remember when she was a Disney star?
Yeah, it was great. We had like a great like 4 or 5 years.
Was it great though?
Yeah, Mean Girls is pretty amazing.
That's not Disney though.
Yeah, but it's a byproduct of her stardom, you know, coming from Disney.
I blame them for that. You know, that's Rachel McAdams' vehicle. I know that Lindsay Lohan is on the poster. But that's Rachel McAdams' vehicle.
No, see, I think if you're on the poster, that means it is your movie. Rachel McAdams might have stolen it, but let's just say she had Freaky Friday, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, and then Mean Girls was the peak of Lindsay Lohan. Because after that, it was, Herbie Fully Loaded.
Oh, so you're not including Herbie Fully Loaded in the golden age of Lindsay Lohan.
No, that is the beginning of the end.
Wow. That's a... Herbie's a fucking harbinger of doom, man.
Yeah, she... Because then, isn't it crazy that it was only 3 years from Mean Girls to I Know Who Killed Me?
That is kind of crazy. Have you ever seen I Know Who Killed Me?
No.
You should watch I Know Who Killed Me.
Yeah, is it pretty great?
No. Not at all.
But I should watch it just to put myself through the pain and suffering of seeing it.
Yeah, I know you're a fucking...
A sadist?
Yeah.
Not wrong about that when it comes to movies. We'll talk about Gemini Man later, though.
Wow.
Hot take. Let's go to the next one in the box office. Is The Addams Family, the animated sequel to...
Starring Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, is this even a sequel? What does this count as?
I don't think it's a sequel. I think it's a reimagining. It's just a reboot of the franchise. So I didn't know this. I'd only heard of the Addams Family from like the 90s films with Angelica Houston and Christina Ricci and those people. Yeah. The Addams Family has been around since like 1932.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They started as like a New Yorker comic strip. And I guess they just kept on making media with this property. I think they're technically public domain now.
Really? Isn't that insane? Because I assume that for some of the Addams Family movies, they had to put at the end, or like based on the New Yorker comic strip, The Addams Family.
Yeah. I've never seen an Addams Family movie.
Me either, I don't think. Nothing about it really interests me either.
See, part of me does want to go back and watch like what Addams Family Values. I think that's what everybody says is the good one.
I don't even know that they say that. I don't think they talk about these movies.
They really don't. But I was just reading I was reading up on Addams Family because, you know, this movie's coming out. I was curious, like, why is Sony putting this much money towards this property? What do you think they're going to get out of it? I don't know. Apparently, Box Office Mojo didn't get the budget number. But the Addams Family Values is apparently a good and well-liked movie. And those movies, both live-action Addams Family movies, are rated PG-13. So they're edgy.
And PG-13 in like the early 2000s was like kind of could be pretty raunchy.
Those are before, those were like 1992, 1993.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Those movies are like almost as old as I am.
I don't want to think about that. That kind of falls to me in the same category as those Brady Bunch sequels.
Fuck those movies. Remember? Fuck the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, no, but do you remember they made like an like edgy Brady Bunch movie?
Did they?
Is this ringing any bells?
They made a very Brady movie or something.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what I'm talking about.
Was it edgy?
Yeah, it's like PG-13.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that.
I'm telling you, they're like they did this like whole thing in the 90s where they made it like a little bit edgier.
Dude,
yeah, it is. It followed its predecessor by placing the 70s Brady Bunch family into a contemporary 90s setting where much of the humor is derived from the resulting culture clash and the utter lack of awareness that they show toward their relatively unusual lifestyle.
I kind of want to watch that movie now.
Yeah.
I'm interested.
Could be good.
But also, let Zack Snyder direct an Addams Family adaptation.
Can we go one episode?
No.
Without talking about
this
like Zack
Snyder. This is what you signed up for.
I want to get off the ride.
Please let this end. There is no end to the ride.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's keep this gravy train rolling then. Number three this weekend was the movie that we saw, Gemini Man, Ang Lee's tour de force starring two Will Smiths at the same time, brought in $20 million in its first weekend on a budget of $138 million. This lost so much money.
Ouch. But it hasn't.
Ang Lee's never going to make another movie again.
It hasn't been released internationally, and Ang Lee is bulletproof. He has made so many bombs, and he still keeps getting these crazy fucking deals. I swear to God, it's all because of Brokeback Mountain. Like, Brokeback Mountain is just that well-regarded. He can get any deal he wants in Hollywood.
I think he's probably good. Like, his movies probably make a lot of money overseas, right?
Maybe. That's what I'm curious, because this movie hasn't had, I think, an international, at least a full international release yet. So I'm curious to see how this movie does in China, in Brazil, in the Czech Republic.
So Life of Pi made $600 million,
which is
worldwide.
Pretty good.
Off a budget of $120 million, which is pretty good. And then what else? I mean, he did Billy...
Yeah, that was a bomb.
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk made $30 million. Production budget not put down. Taking Woodstock made $9 million off a $30 million budget. Not good.
Yep.
Lust, Caution, I don't know what that is, made $67 out of $15. And then we get back to Brokeback Mountain, which made $178 on $14, which is where he gets it. I mean, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, right? That's the big one. $17 million worldwide, $213 million. Yeah, it's pretty big. I guess Life of Pi, real big one.
Yeah. What about the Hulk?
Just Hulk?
Just Hulk. Yeah.
A budget of $137 million worldwide, $245 million.
Wow.
So not really that great.
Interesting. I guess that's before like the comic book heyday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not very good.
Yeah. That's debatable. Hulk is an interesting film.
It very good?
No, I wouldn't call it very good.
I don't think it's very good.
I don't think any of Ang Lee's films very good, but they're all very interesting.
You wouldn't call Brokeback Mountain very good?
No, I'd call it very interesting.
No, Brokeback Mountain is a masterpiece. It is so good.
All right. You can say that. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to try to convince you that it's not.
Right.
But all of his films are very interesting. They're like, no movie that I watch of Ang Lee's is ever boring, which I am so grateful for.
I would say Gemini Man to a point was kind of boring.
That's because you
saw it. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later on, but you fucked up.
I paid $0 instead of $20.
Yeah, you fucked up.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's cut to the chase then. But we're going to talk about Joker first. Or do you want to talk about Gemini Man since it's right on our minds?
Let's do Gemini Man. We're right here. It's right on our tongues already.
Yeah. All right. I'll start. So Gemini Man, the Will Smith starring Ang Lee movie about a hitman who is a little bit long in the tooth.
I think
so he's about to retire.
You fucked that delivery up a little bit.
How so?
It's a Ang Lee movie starring Will Smith.
Oh, did I say Will Smith starring yeah. Ang Lee? Isn't that hilarious? I would pay to see that.
Me too.
A younger Ang Lee trying to kill old Ang Lee.
Directed by Will Smith.
There's a laugh track. Yeah. And so then Will Smith raps the entire time.
Hip hop sound. Will Smith does the soundtrack.
Yes. It's his passion project. I would love that. So Will Smith, who is starring in this movie, he is an old hitman who's about to retire, and the government says, no, thank you, and they send a younger genetic clone of him to kill him for some reason, because he finds out. Yeah.
That's not what actually happens, though. I guess that's what the trailer is presented it as, but you got to see the movie to figure out the real mystery behind why young Smith is trying to kill old Smith.
I mean, yeah, I guess there is kind of a twist, but it's super. So like
it's not a twist. It's just, you know, different motivations for the character than are presented in the trailer.
Yeah. They're like, oh, this guy's figuring out like he killed a scientist instead of a terrorist.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess we got to kill him. And then every government agency is immediately trying to murder this guy
here. OK, I'm so curious because I think I would agree with you in that this film is not great. If I had seen this film in standard, like 24 frames a second, 2D fucking pleb-ass movie format. But I did not. I paid the premium to see this in high frame rate 3D. And boy, howdy, was it an experience.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm happy that I did, because this is not an experience that you will ever get watching it at home on your basic ass TV without 3D glasses in 24 frames a second.
So is this like Avatar, where the plot is like mediocre and then the effects are just amazing?
So I liked it more than Avatar, honestly, because Avatar. So to me, I've never been like the biggest fan of 3D. And I think this movie kind of showed me why. It's because 24 frames a second, like the base frame rate that the human eye stops seeing like individual frames and just perceives moving images as like one continuous image. That is not good for 3D. Like what? Like we're already kind of pushing our human like perceptual boundaries by limiting movies to 24 frames a second. And the only reason they did that was because it was cheaper to shoot in 24 frames a second when you had to shoot on film back in the day. Which is why
you need way more film, which is expensive.
Yes.
But to film it at anything higher than 24 frames per second.
We have digital cameras now. We can move past the 24 frames per second limit. Nobody does, because everybody's like, oh, it's so fucking cinematic if it's like at the lowest frame rate possible before you start seeing individual frames as pictures instead of like a continual image. Ang Lee, like this is why I like Ang Lee so much, is because Ang Lee is just like, fuck convention. I'm going to shoot one. He shot a drama in 24 frames or in 120 frames a second 3D. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which is not the best movie, but is an interesting film experiment, because I do think that the high frame rate actually adds a lot to an actor's performance, and being able to see just like the subtleties in their facial expressions in super dramatic scenes adds so much to what would otherwise be like a completely standard like FX at midnight movie.
But don't you think, and this, I get the same vibe, because we know that soap operas are filmed on digital cameras, and so that they have this like artificial look about them where you can more clearly tell
yes
that the things around them are, they're on a set And I could even feel it in this movie when, and this brings me into one of the bad things about it, is that I could tell that it was filmed using like a 120 frames per second.
And then they just cut it down to 24.
Yeah. So they removed the spectacle of seeing it that way, but they kept the feeling that the whole movie was kind of empty and that everything was on sound stages and everything felt very empty to me, at least. Everything felt very like fake, and I couldn't really put my finger on it, but that lingering sense of fakeness was there.
Given
that, though, some of the action scenes were still pretty spectacular and pretty insanely executed. I had that moment where I'm like, how did they do that? Like, that was super cool. And I assume that effect would have been enhanced by the 120 frames per second 3D.
Yeah. It's interesting. I felt the polar opposite watching it in this format, because to me, it, you know, obviously it's fake. Will Smith is not fighting Will Smith.
Movies are fake.
You
heard it here first, folks.
You come to this podcast for truths like this.
we refuse to lie to you.
Exactly. But watching it at a high frame rate, I think that the action sequences really came to life. I mean, not even the action sequences exclusively. I think the whole movie came to life in this high frame rate. And I think Ang Lee makes some very interesting choices on how to shoot certain scenes to really play up the high frame rate format. But watching it in high frame rate, one, like the stunts in this movie in a high frame rate felt like they hit so much harder. Like in a high frame rate, I was just watching, like, I would watch, like, you know, Will Smith fall off a building, hit like a ledge, and then hit a tree, and then just like land on the ground. And it's all like, there are a lot of really good wonders in this film too, mm-hmm. that I think are very impressive. Yeah. But seeing it in a high frame rate, I'm just like, this looks closer to real life than 24 frames a second. And it feels more real too. Like, you're like, oh, that dude got fucking hit by a car. Like that, like, that looks painful. And they give so much attention to, like, during the gunfights, specifically the one in, I forget what country they're in, but it's like the first time that Budapest. Will Smith sees, in Budapest, when he sees his clone for the first time.
Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, that guy looks,
he
like
looks like
me.
But like the gunfights in high frame rate looks so good, because they, like, whoever, I just want to give a shout out to the people who set up the action sequences, who had like the who set up the blocking, who set up the squibs, set up all the destruction of the environment before they shot the scene, because it works so well. Just seeing all this debris flying through you in high frame rate, just like, it looks so clear. It's in such high fidelity, and the 3D really adds to that too. But I do think that the high frame rate is the biggest factor in making these action scenes stand out from standard film action scenes.
Do you think that you would have enjoyed this movie as much without the spectacle?
No.
Of not the gimmick, but the feature. Okay.
No,
so now,
no, the script,
now you know
script,
how I feel about
script,
this movie.
Yeah, I know. I get why you're upset, because the script to this movie is trash. The writing is bad. There are a couple interesting ideas, and I kind of like some of the themes that they're bringing in. And even some of the imagery, I think, is pretty well thought out and very, like, Ang Lee. Like, oh, it's like, oh, Ang Lee is not a fucking hack. Like, Ang Lee is not fucking Brett Ratner. but it is a bad script. Apparently, it was blacklisted for 10 years. It was written in, like, 2009, and it just took forever to get written.
Over, like, 20 years old. I hear this is, like, a really old script.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that. It feels like a movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger would have done in his heyday.
Yeah, I wondered, did you hear that Tom Cruise was up for this role, but he couldn't do it because of scheduling conflicts?
No. I would have paid to see that, too.
Yeah, that would have been pretty wild. Overall, like, I mean, we kind of hit on, like, the things that I think were good about it, like the fight sequences, the motorcycle race especially, really, really cool.
Seeing that in high frame rate, goddamn.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
I should have gone to the AMC River East.
Just go do it. You're not going to be able to do it once it's on DVD.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this movie's so bad that it makes me, like, wonder if I want to do that.
Just
like,
go get shit-faced. Take an Uber or the train or whatever to the AMC.
You know Chicago so well.
To the AMC that is showing the high frame rate version of this movie. It's worth it.
It's worth it.
Just pretend Mary Elizabeth Winstead is like not in the movie. Just forget everything about her.
Yeah, really. Everything that's not Will Smith and his clone is bad. And the CGI, how did it work for you? Because for me, I bought it, but also Uncanny Valley, like major Uncanny Valley
for
me.
So here's the interesting thing. I think, and again, I feel like I'm just chilling for high frame rate movies because I want to see more of this.
Right.
I think that the high frame rate helped mask some of the bad CG in this movie because everything looks so alien to you as a viewer in high frame rate. Like it looks so clean that when you render these special effects in high frame rate, you're just like, oh, this makes sense within the world. Like I'm not used to this format. So these effects look like they just belong in this world because everything is hyper real at this point.
Right. So the high frame rate makes it so everything looks weird. So you don't notice when things look weird. Exactly. That's basically what you're saying.
Okay. Well, so here's the thing. Have you ever played played a video game?
Yeah, several times. Yeah.
You know,
I'm known
when you play a video game at a higher frame rate, because like, so video games are usually 30 frames a second. That was like the standard for the longest time. But ever since you got a gaming PC, you've been playing at higher frame rates.
Yes.
You notice how those just look significantly smoother?
You know what? Actually, now that you say this, I had a moment where I was playing on PC, and then I played the same game. It was Apex Legends on a console, and I was immediately like, oh, this is so weird. Like, it's...
Yep.
It was even the fourth. I was like, this is like a slideshow. Like,
You can see in between the frames. You can see the delay between the images being rendered on the screen.
Right, but only when I was exposed to this high frame rate stuff.
Exactly, but once you get exposed, you can never go back.
Right, which I'm like, stop it. Like,
nope, you cannot go back.
Video games, I get it. Movies, I'm not... I mean, some of these action movies, maybe.
Imagine the Raid series in high frame rate.
I can't. Like, I literally can't because
I want more movies in high... Like, I'm kind of bummed that this movie bombed because I want more... Like, I'm a big fan of The Hobbit in the 48 frames a second. Like, the weird frame per second wanted to do. Peter Jackson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that looks really cool. And I also think that in those movies, it also added to the CG, just like making it all look like this hyper real presentation of reality. Kind of it makes it easier to accept that these CG characters will exist in this world.
I'm very interested to understand what you mean, because I really cannot. I'm like, because trying to explain it like someone like something that you've never seen before.
Oh, yeah. It's the hardest thing to describe. It's a thing. It's an aspect of the film that you cannot market. It's like trying to market virtual reality. You just can't effectively get them like the experience across on a 2D plane.
You need to show it. Yeah,
exactly. Now,
the real kicker here is that you didn't even see it in 120 frames per second.
I saw it in 60. Yeah.
Yeah. So you saw it in half the frames per second.
This is what I'm so curious to see if I would notice a difference. I've heard people that play games, like if you play games at 120 frames, people say you can tell a difference between like 60 and 120. So I want to know if I could have seen, like if I would notice a difference on this film at 120, but there's only like 14 theaters in the entire country that are showing it at 120.
No, there's none in the country.
What?
The only Ang Lee's like private showroom, like, is where you can see it, and then you have to go internationally to get the other ones.
God damn, I want to go to Ang Lee's private showroom.
Yeah, I bet it's weird though. I bet it's real weird.
See, I bet you he just has Hulk memorabilia. It's just a Hulk everywhere.
Like, would you guys like a Hulk backpack? How about a lunchbox, please? I need to get rid of this stuff.
He pays Eric Bana to just sit in his private screening room,
smoking angrily.
Great people, yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, I guess I feel like we've said everything that we need to say. Like, well, I mean, it's such a catalyst or a boiling point, this technology, because it is really the difference between still water and boiling water.
Yes.
You're like so hot on it and I'm so not on it that I think that's the recommendation
but
that we have to give.
You haven't experienced it.
Right. But if you're somebody who lives in a place where you can't get this, you can only get the standard format, don't see it. That's kind of what I'm getting from you. And if you can see it in this special format, do it. It'll change your life.
Yes, I agree. That's, you know, if I were to sum up this movie, it's a fascinating, boundary pushing movie that has the skeleton of a shitty script.
Yeah, there is a lot of good stuff in this movie that is like ideas of facing yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do
and
think
fatherhood
that
this and, is like, a, there are some.
Yeah, this
there's
is
some themes in here. It's just all bullshit. Like, I'm sure Ang Lee is just like, what's the cheapest script I can find? Because I'm going to have to spend so much money on
the
like
filming tech. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Can you get me a script where I only need to pay one megastar for two roles?
Yeah.
That is probably what he was looking for.
I do want to give a shout out, though, to Will Smith, because he does act in this movie.
Yes.
And I think Will Smith is undervalued. Like, he does a pretty good job in every movie, even when like the movie is shitty. He is not the reason it is shitty.
No, yeah, he's always showing up. But also, I kind of feel like if Will Smith is not in the movie, it doesn't get made. So when there is a shitty movie, it is entirely his fault.
I mean, okay, that's fair. But Will Smith's performance, especially as like young Will Smith, when he has like all of the tracking stuff on his face so that they can de-age him, the fact that he can get these emotions out effectively, I think is pretty good.
Yeah, I think I could tell he was doing something with his voice. It didn't sound entirely natural.
Yeah, it didn't. He didn't sound like the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, he's definitely doing something with his voice, and they didn't modulate or whatever. But the fact that we can get like deep fakes now, where we can change like what people sound like.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't like. Yeah, I don't even want to get into that.
Yeah.
I think we've said enough about this. We said more about this movie than anybody will say.
This movie deserves
season.
Analysis. This is an Ang Lee film.
True. And it does deserve to be.
I hope people look back on this fondly and are just like, yeah, dude, Ang Lee, he's a weirdo, but he's a good weirdo.
It'll be weird in the future when people look back at these movies, like especially Avatar and, you know, Gemini Man, when you think about these like groundbreaking technological feats and go back. And they'll just see it on like a regular TV and be like, oh, that was fine. And then everyone else will be like, no, you had to see it in the theater.
Exactly.
I think that there is a coolness to that.
Yeah, I like it. It almost feels kind of like Broadway. Like you have to see you have to see this live. Like this is a theatrical experience. It's not a home consumer experience. And even if you have a 3D TV, fuck you. Why'd you waste your money on that? Also, 3D and 24 frames a second. 3D is awful. That's how you get motion sickness. But 60 frames or 120 frames a second 3D.
Stop.
That's how you do 3D. And you can even like, okay, so I saw this with my roommate Elmer, friend of the show.
Okay. Famous friend of the pod.
I had to convince him because he was telling me how like 3D fucks him up. Like 3D will make him sick.
Yeah.
He had no problems in this movie. He was like, that was actually really fucking cool. Just seeing it in this frame rate, like seeing it this sharp, this smooth, and in 3D, it felt, I don't want to say real, but it felt like there's an immediacy to everything happening on screen.
Oh, man. Am I going to have to see Gemini Man again? God damn it.
Hey, I'm telling you, just get real inebriated.
Okay.
Go see this movie in high frame rate. I guarantee you it's going to change. It's going to change your mind on how you view this film. Even from the opening scene, like as soon as you see that bullet train shoot by at 60 frames a second in 3D, you're like, oh, I'm fucking braced. I know what I'm in for. This is cool as shit.
All right. I look forward to never talking about this movie again.
Yeah.
Speaking of things I never want to talk about again, there's another movie that that came at a time of immediacy in our country.
Uh-huh.
A movie so provocative and controversial that we couldn't even talk about it for a week.
Yeah.
A movie that is destined to win every Oscar this year and for years to come.
We just really had to ruminate on what this movie had to say about society.
Yes. And that film, of course, is Todd Phillips's, from the maker of old school and The Hangover Part 3.
Exactly. Don't forget Due
Joker,
Date.
Joker starring Joaquin Phoenix.
And just Joaquin Phoenix.
Just Joaquin Phoenix. Zazie Beetz. Robert De Niro. Bobby De Niro. Mark Maron.
Mark
for like
Maron is
10
in this
seconds.
Movie. He's got a cute yeah. little cameo.
Yeah, he's barely in it. Apparently, I think they cut his scene.
Maybe. I wonder if Joaquin Phoenix made that decision.
Todd, cut this guy out. He's not a Joker.
Yeah.
He's more of a comedian. Yeah, something dumb like that. All right, let's talk about this movie. First of all, to those listening at home, chill the fuck out. This is a movie. It is an R-rated Batman Begins. That is what this movie
is. That is what this movie is. But look at how many people are upset that there wasn't a mass shooting at one of the screenings of this movie.
Yeah, what a crazy media, like, follow-up.
This is the dumbest shit I've ever had to witness in, like, the media landscape. The fact that everybody was actually, like, legitimately trying to fear-monger seeing this movie.
Right.
But I love that it still made box office records. It still set the bar.
Yeah, now it's a record-setting Joker.
Yeah.
It is officially crowned the first week in October, the box office, the new fall
this,
box office
this
weekend.
This movie made more money than Venom, and it's a rated R comic book property that is a character study that was not released in China and will never be released in China.
Right.
That's
which
wild.
Is crazy considering that they harvest organs.
Yes. They're the true Jokers.
Yeah, exactly. LeBron James is the true Joker. God, this movie, a few notes. So it's a new take on a comic book movie, kind of. It's a villain study. Venom is an anti-hero. I'll go out and say it. There hasn't really been a movie completely focused on the villain.
Yeah.
Of a story.
Yeah.
Like this. And I would say a good way to describe the tone is like if Batman Begins were R-rated and it was about the Joker.
I agree.
Obviously steeps itself in the real world, although it takes place in 1980s Gotham. It tries to bring about all these social conditions of poverty. And, you know, we understand more about Gotham because we're actually taking it from someone who lives there. Arthur Fleck is Joaquin Phoenix, the titular Joker, and he's got a lot of problems. People are not nice to him, and he has some mental illnesses, and the government is shutting off his benefits.
And he can't stop laughing.
Yeah, he can't stop laughing. That's one of his conditions. Apparently, it's so painful that that's happening. He hates to laugh.
I mean, honestly, that was one of my favorite aspects, I think, of the movie. At first, I was like,
the laugh.
I cringed a little bit. I'm like, oh, so like this is just a mental condition that he has to laugh. I'm like, this seems kind of weird and forced. But after thinking a little bit about it, I kind of like that. Like he is consistently fighting it. That it's a painful experience for him to just be laughing all the time. And oh boy, Joaquin Phoenix's performance in this movie is great.
Fantastic. He really carries the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot fault his performance at all. It's so fucking good.
Yeah. It is like a good way for me to describe it. This movie is not really like an art house movie. It is still clearly like a comic book movie.
Mm-hmm.
As serious as it wants to take itself and as many themes that it brings up, it is an origin story for the Joker that exists in the comic book world. It's not like in the same way that Batman Begins and The Dark Knight try and paint Batman as like, oh yeah, this could happen. Like look at how real this is. But we're all kind of sitting there be like, yeah, but no.
Like,
that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I think there's a difference between like look at how like real this is, like how plausible this story is. But even with Batman Begins, like the movie opens with him going to visit ninjas in Tibet. Like
yes, exactly.
I do think that is not that believable. I think it's grounded, and I think the strength of Batman Begins, the entire Nolan trilogy, is that it sets its rules up initially, where believability is not I don't think believability is like a metric you can judge a lot of movies on. I think relatability is something that is a lot more poignant when it comes to like judging a movie and judging a character, how you write these things. That's like where the groundedness of a movie comes from is relatability, not necessarily believability or like how close it is to realism.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I guess to clear up my point is that Batman Begins sets Batman in reality, sets it in our world. Like it's called Gotham City, but it roughly plays by the rules of our existence. Whereas, you know, the Tim Burton Batmans, those were fantastic in a way that more reminds me of like a fantasy. Like they're set in Gotham City, which is not our world.
Yeah.
It is a weird, like stylized version of the
gothic,
world.
Everything, like all the shadows in this world look super cool. You got Billy D is the fucking there's DA, like
henchmen and stuff. Yeah, it's set in a very they're vats of chemicals that can turn people evil. This is set this in the same
this
way
is
that Batman
set
Begins
in 1970s
is set in our reality,
New York.
Right? And it has it paints the story of a guy who is just shit on through, and that's like the hardest. But so like the first three quarters of this movie are a like look at how bad this guy's life is. It's like that is looking at this person who, you know, you feel bad for, you empathize with, because it's like he didn't choose what is happening to him, and what is happening to him is arguably the worst. He works as a clown for hire. Everyone's mean to him, and he takes care of his dying mother, who's got some mental issues as well. He's depressed. He, you know, a lot of things are not going right for him. And then three Wall Street dudes try and beat him up. And that's when everything changes.
Yeah, because his shitty coworker gave him a gun.
Yeah. He said, hey, you might need to protect yourself out there from those animals. And then he protects himself. And what I think is a key part of this movie that people have talked about online that it makes them uncomfortable is that it makes you empathize with this person who has all these mental diseases and like all these bad things happening to him, and then he ends up doing awful things
doing crime.
He's glorified for those things. And I want to make two things very clear: that this movie does not say that meant that his mental illness caused him to commit crime.
Yeah,
they do not. That is not a part of it. And also.
Yeah, think about this a lot. You got to be very sensitive when talking about this film.
Yeah, it doesn't have. And I don't think it glorifies this person at all. I think this person is very clearly damaged and not dealing with their problems in a constructive way.
No shit.
Like I think it's pretty clearly like by the end you're just like, man, this guy has like gone off the rails. Like I think it paints, it really tries hard to, it's got this like weird Occupy Wall Street thread kind of running through it.
Yeah,
that the movie kind of almost like takes pains to mention, like, by the way, this guy doesn't care about anything. Like he's an idiot. Like he's not really, he's just having a rough time, and everyone keeps making fun of him. It's everyone else who's taking this message and running with it, which I think is hilarious considering the amount of people who saw the movie or read reviews of it online and just kind of went with it without really understanding.
Yeah, well, so okay, that actually brings up something I want to talk about in this film, that one of the things that makes it, that elevates it so much higher than I thought it was going to be, and one of the reasons that I kind of fell in love with this film, is that this Joker, he is not like you said, it doesn't glorify him. He's not just like, it doesn't glorify his mental illness or his crimes or anything.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of love that he just becomes the accidental clown prince of crime. Like he's not the Heath Ledger Joker where he is like psychic and can tell what everybody's going to do at all times. He's not like, you know, he's not a mastermind. He's not subverting the plan of society. And I think that the most poignant social commentary of this film comes through the fact that he never set out to do this. He never set out to be like the, he didn't want to change society. Like, he's almost kind of the polar opposite of the Heath Ledger Joker, where the Heath Ledger Joker is like, I just want to show the people that they're all one bad day away from, you know, whatever I am. But Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, like, this Joker is just like, nah, dude, like, I'm just real fucked up. I don't want to become an icon for people. I accidentally killed some people, and like, people started.
And now I just want to kill myself on TV. Like,
yeah, exactly. He's like, that was his plan. He was going to kill himself on TV because he's suicidal. He is not a, right. like, he's not a mastermind. He's not this Batman villain. He kind of just fumbles his way into becoming this iconic comic book villain, which I love, because I think the biggest social commentary about this film is that society will look at instances like this, and whether it's because of how it's the news reports it, or because of how our like, collective subconscious relates to crimes or tragedies mm-hmm. like this, and then reframes them so that they can speak to us personally. That, to me, is the biggest message of the film, is that some fucked up, like, dude with mental issues killed some people on a train, and without any context, all these people in Gotham City looked at that and suddenly lionized him. Like, yeah. The movie didn't lionize him. The society that the film sets up lionized him, which I think right. is great. I think that's the smartest way you could approach this movie in today's, you know, social climate.
Oh, yeah. I think it does a good job of executing on all of that. And I think this is an interesting artistic direction for a movie to go into, a comic book movie. It's R-rated, and it's definitely filmed like an art house.
Dude,
like,
it was shot on film.
Yeah. It looks good.
Yeah.
I think it looks really good. And hopefully this, I mean, I really like this movie. I think besides Joaquin Phoenix, the rest of it, I don't know if it would be as good without him. I'm more excited about what movies this is going to open the door for now that we have a hugely successful R-rated standalone DC movie. Is Warner Brothers going to make their production company just the purveyor of R-rated comic book fare based on mainstream comic book heroes?
Apparently, Birds of Prey is also rated R, which I'm very excited for. We haven't gotten the confirmation
yet. That's the rumor. Yeah,
the MPAA has not given the rating out yet, but the director's come out and said, like, yes, this is going to be a hard R rating. We can't do this movie any other way. And I like to think that
I've heard that before.
I know. But the success of Joker is...
I've been lied to.
So here's the other thing. Birds of Prey is going to be rated R. I hope so, anyway. I want Sony to take notice. Give me the R-rated Venom. Fuck China.
Did you hear today?
Get Tencent out of there. Liberate Hong Kong. Give me an R-rated Venom.
Did you hear that they announced today basically that they're looking to cross over like Venom and Spider-Man?
I did see that. Yeah.
So it'll never happen, man. We're going to get a PG-13 Carnage movie.
So, one, that's fucked up. But do you think we're going to see any crossover between Joaquin Phoenix's Joker and any other DC properties? Or do you think this is actually a standalone film like they keep saying it is?
I mean, they've hinted when I've read the interviews, and it seems like they're kind of baiting Joaquin Phoenix, and he's not really saying anything like definitive. But he's like, yeah, I guess I'd come back like if they had something. But I really don't know. You can't have this guy facing Batman.
Robert Pattinson?
He'll get destroyed.
Yeah.
Batman will beat the shit out of him. Like, this guy is not a criminal mastermind, and Batman is a detective mastermind.
Yeah.
And especially if this Matt Reeves Batman is going to be the world's greatest detective early in his career.
So this is the only way I can think that movie would work, is if Joker were able to mobilize, you know, his fucking congregation against the Batman, where they never have a face-to-face confrontation, because obviously Batman would beat the shit out of Joaquin Phoenix. You know, Joaquin Phoenix, he's just bones, and
he's just bones. But you're even saying coordinate his congregation, like, that is mastermind stuff. I don't think Arthur Fleck is capable of that type of
Yeah, that's true.
Machiavellian mafioso type dealings.
Hey,
I think this guy is someone who's gonna just kill people.
Maybe like, he's
like Victor Zsasz.
Maybe he reads a book when he's in solitary. You know, maybe
I don't like where this is going.
Maybe he reads the, maybe he reads The Prince when he's in solitary confinement.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, maybe. Who knows? Also, where does this put? How old is like the Joker when Batman is like an adult? Like, because Bruce Wayne is like,
dude. It depends on what fucking author you're reading at the time. Like, so the Joker,
is there one where Batman is like in his late 20s and Joker is in his 60s?
No.
Well,
in his 50s, in his 40s, maybe.
Maybe.
But honestly, you never really know the age of the Joker. And also DC's just come out and put out the it's canon now. There are multiple Jokers. Like the Joker is not only is the Joker an archetype in our world, Joker is now an archetype in the DC universe now too, because there are three different Jokers in the comic books that are all inspired by different portrayals of the character.
And so that's canon that in Gotham City, there are multiple Jokers.
Yeah, it's not just Gotham, though. The Joker is like, so my favorite.
He's a worldwide supervillain.
My favorite version of the Joker that is now canon is that he is. So they call him the Pale Man, and he's just this dude. Do you remember, like, how familiar are you with the Batman lore?
I guess we're about to find out.
Do you know who Ra's al Ghul is?
Yeah, I know who Ra's al Ghul is.
You know he's immortal?
Yeah.
The new Joker, well, not the new, one of the Joker interpretations, or I guess one of the versions of the Joker in the comic books now, is also immortal, who actually predates Ra's al Ghul, and they just call him the Pale Man. Because
so he's like it. He's like Pennywise.
He's like Pennywise, but he's not like supernatural. Like he just like injects that.
Sounds like he is.
Well, he injects that weird Ra's al Ghul juice into his spine and it makes him like live forever. But he's just,
for sure, yeah.
He's just been the Joker since people came to America. And it's kind of cool. I like how they tie it into the history of Gotham, where like he was the Pale Man back in the West when Gotham was first founded. And he's just been tormenting the city for eternity.
Cowboy Joker.
Yes. It's cool. It's fucking cool. It's dope as fuck. You get Jonah Hex versus the Joker, like the proto Batman.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, Joker is such a flexible character.
So you think that's
character.
What's coming next for this Joker film? You think he's going to put on a cowboy hat?
No.
We'll get a crossover between this and the Sisters Brothers?
I don't think. Oh, I need to watch the Sisters Brothers. Goddamn. I don't think we get another Joker movie. I think this is the one and done for Joaquin Phoenix. I don't think Joaquin Phoenix has actually ever come back to reprise a character in a sequel.
No, he has not.
And I do not think that Joker is going to be the character to do it.
Yeah. What do you think Todd Phillips does after this? Because I think he's got another blank check. Like he can do. How did Todd Phillips become like the most powerful director like in Hollywood?
He didn't.
Next.
Because Joker's not a blank check movie. Joker's a highly limited movie. Like $55 million for a character this prominent is unheard of.
Exactly. Which is, I think it's the equivalent of a blank check. Like make whatever movie you want. Obviously, we're not going to give you like $250 million to make like an art house, like R rated. But like if you want to do it, we'll give you the appropriate amount of money, which I would say I'm surprised this even costs like $50 million. They probably replace De Niro with Marc Maron and it gets made for like, you know, like $25 million.
Oh, yeah. This is a pretty low budget movie. And again, we don't have any like massive fights. Batman is not in this movie. But I honestly,
he is in this movie.
Well, Bruce Wayne is in this movie,
right?
He's not Batman. but I think that Todd Phillips goes and makes an original project. It's not going to be a licensed character, but it's going to be what he wanted The Hangover to be originally. Like, I don't know if you saw all three Hangover movies, but those movies
I didn't make it to the third one.
I watched the third one because I was getting myself hyped for the Joker. And I'm like, what is Todd Phillips?
You went to extreme lengths.
No, I was like, what is Todd Phillips' vision? Also, I just like John Goodman. I've been watching The Righteous Gemstones. I'm on a John Goodman binge. So I had to watch The Hangover Part 3. And that movie,
sounds
like,
about right.
It's not good, but it's also not awful. And there's some darkness in there, and it's like it's competently made. He makes some bold choices for a comedy movie back in 2013 that kind of makes sense watching The Joker now. I'm like,
interesting.
Yeah, there's a darkness in him, and I think that he's going to do something very similar where there is like a very dark, almost ironic sense of humor to whatever film he does next. But I don't think it's going to be another licensed character. I think this is
when Due Date 2.
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo. I wonder, I think he, what are the odds that he becomes like the next, like, I'm not going to say it, but he becomes like the go-to guy for DC for like these R-rated,
the next Zack Snyder. I know what you're saying. Very low. I think DC is like they clearly.
You think
see,
he never makes another DC movie?
Yeah, I don't think he makes another DC movie. I think this is his one and done. I would love to see him do it, but honestly, I don't know how much of this film should be credited to him, should be credited to the writers, or should be credited to Joaquin Phoenix.
I mean, Todd Phillips was a writer on it too.
He was a co-writer, but. He wasn't the only writer.
True.
Also, apparently Joaquin Phoenix just kind of said fuck it to a majority of the script and just did his own thing.
Sure.
And Todd Phillips was like, yeah, that works. We're going to go with it.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean, and Bradley Cooper produced it, so I'm sure he had a lot of input.
Oh, yeah. Let Bradley Cooper play the Joker, man.
Oh, man, that'd be weird.
Sexy Joker. Give me sexy Joker.
Stop. We already had it with Jared Leto.
Oh, sure.
So Scott Silver is the guy who co-wrote it. Here's some other things that he has written.
Yeah.
The Mod Squad.
What?
Exactly. 8 Mile. He wrote 8 Mile.
Good.
That's good. He has uncredited rewrites for X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Ouch.
The Fighter.
Good.
Written. The Finest Hours. That Chris Pine boat movie.
Oh, that's actually like pretty decent too for what it is for a Disney live action film.
Yeah, no sequel though. And then Joker. So he's only written like three things.
I think he's got talent. I think he's a good writer.
He went to the AFI Conservatory.
Wow. Wow.
Maybe one day I can too. Yeah. So overall, I think we're both pretty up on Joker. You probably have seen it, but if you haven't, go check it out. Definitely, especially now that you know that nothing's going to happen at a movie theater, definitely go check it out. You'll have a good time, and other people will be there to see it too. It is a surprising movie in its violence, but I think it's only because it keep making you think like you're watching a comic book movie and then something really violent happens and you're like, ah, whoa. Well, back to not that.
No, I just remember the first time I heard Joaquin Phoenix say fuck. I'm like, oh, this is not a comic book movie.
Yeah, boy, my boy says fuck.
Yeah.
This easily did not have to be R-rated either. Like, I like how they made it R-rated. This did not have to be R-rated.
Yeah, you could have done this not R-rated, but I don't think it would have been nearly as effective.
Agreed.
Like, and just this movie's aesthetic is so good. The soundtrack is great. The same composer, she actually did the music for Chernobyl, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is what explains
some
why
the music was really
why
great.
The music is so fucking great.
Very hauntingly beautiful for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. All right, Rob, it's been a good week. I think we're both pretty bullish on the movies that came out.
Yeah.
You more so on one of them. But we got some good stuff coming up next week, too, that I think we're both going to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
The new Zombieland movie, which I assume that's what we're going for.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Or do you want to see Maleficent 2, The Mistress of Evil?
Honestly, I will see both, but Zombieland is my first choice.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, let's get ready for that because I am so ready for it. But other than that, you know it, guys. Follow us on Twitter at Viewing Angles. We're on Facebook, too. Follow me at The Dan Leo Show. D. Leo on Letterboxd. Rob, what about you?
Follow
Robert Jr. Jr.
Yeah. Fucking just do my job for me, Dan.
I will.
Follow me on everything at Robert Jr. Jr. I've started posting two sentence movie reviews on Letterboxd.
You bastard.
sentence.
I've recently broken out of the constraints of one sentence.
Wow, you're really pushing your boundaries, aren't you?
Yeah,
I love it when you get out of your, I love it when you get out of your comfort zone.
Oh, then you're gonna love the next few weeks. Well, all right, nuts. We'll catch you next week. But until then,
bye.
Bye.